Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation as well as the big MLB topics, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse on this beautiful Saturday morning on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live for the Hyundai Score Studios. I'm David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball like we do every Saturday morning. Today, wondering what's suddenly wrong with the Cubs and whether Bill Belichick can stay in town and maybe help the Bears while he's here. Morning, Bruce.
Good morning, David. And we only have like five more games left in the season, right? This is baseball.
This is baseball. Right. Even though Bill Belichick's presence Friday night at Guaranteed Rate Field made you wonder, could he stay through the draft just as an advisor, just to kind of help Ryan Poles? But we're not talking draft today. We're talking Cubs.
No. And look, David, White Sox. It's been a kind of a rougher patch for the Chicago Cubs and their pitching staff, and I think that we were naive probably to think going into this stretch of losing their number one and their number two starting pitchers that they could just keep on going with the rhetoric, hey, we have a lot of depth here. There's a difference between depth in pitching, starting pitching, and quality depth.
That's true, and it was on display again last night. Friday night, if you couldn't find that game on Apple Plus, I'm sure a lot of people tried, and you weren't listening to the score, what's wrong with you? But the Cubs lost to the Mariners, 4-2, the beginning of that three-game series. And as you mentioned, the pitching was problematic. Again, Jordan Wicks, now 0-2, pitched four innings, gave up four earned runs. Drew Smyly and Keegan Thompson was a bright spot, Bruce. Keegan Thompson came in through two innings, but the Cubs 4-2 losers. Now, three of the last four have been losses for the Cubs. Meanwhile, back in Chicago on the South Side, we referenced Bill Belichick was in the stands with Tony La Russa as his guest. Ozzie Guillen had a nice picture on X or Twitter. Check that out. But the Sox didn't deliver. 11-1 losers to the Reds. Another long night at Guaranteed Rate, Bruce.
David, yeah, it was just, I was there in the pregame and Chris Getz talked a little bit, and we'll play some sound from him in a moment here about the state of the White Sox and what they're asking the fans for. But the reality, David, is that 11,000 people there last night, okay? I did it some extensive, rehashing of attendance. And, being a Chicagoan, I want all the Chicago franchises to do well. And I want fans to be want to go out and be there. But, with 11,000 people announced yesterday on a Friday night, pretty nice Friday night except for a few sprinkles.
It was
earlier.
A beautiful night, Bruce. Yeah. It was a beautiful night for baseball.
I worry about the state of the fan base, the state of the organization as far as where they're at. And when you're worried about this the first or second week of the season,
it's trouble.
It is.
It's trouble.
It is.
My wife is not a big sports fan, but I do watch a lot of baseball, obviously, for the job. And last night, she was watching with me. It was on in the background. And the crowd shot. You can't miss it when you're watching it on television. And she said, don't the White Sox want a new stadium? And I said, yeah, that's a big story. We talked about the Sun-Times story on Friday, the billionaire behind the scenes. We'll get to that later. But her point was, as a non-sports fan, as a casual observer who pays attention because of my role or my job, she's like, well, why do they want a new stadium when they can't fill this one? And I think it sounds like a very simple question, and maybe a non-sports fan might ask, but it speaks to what you're talking about. This is a real problem in terms of credibility, visibility, attractiveness. You're bottoming out, and you're going to be asking for a lot moving forward. I don't know where this goes, Bruce, but this is tough to watch.
So after all these years of being a reporter, I have a lot of friends that work for the White Sox and the Cubs, okay? And one of the personnel who's in security took me to the side and he said, I'm really disappointed in you. I heard you on Mully and Haw, and you said there's some things about the franchise that are like an expansion team.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, how can you just bury us when we're down? And I said, well, you know, I care about the people. I care about franchises in Chicago. But my first job is to report what I see and what I know. And I said, this is probably one of the toughest situation that the White Sox have been in personnel-wise as far as baseball players go since the late 60s and early 70s, before Dick Allen showed up, before Mr. Vec came back, before Chuck Tanner, and before they started to roll again, and before, frankly, Jerry Reinsdorf and Eddie Einhorn bought the team and put new life into it. So I said, you know, I'm really sorry. I said, you know, this isn't personal. I have to do my job.
That's the hard part, and I think we all can relate to that, Bruce. You've been here longer than I have, but we all have friends who work for these teams, and when you do get critical or have to express an opinion that might be honest but negative, it's uncomfortable. But you look at the White Sox situation, and it's hard to see anything else. You have referred to them as an expansion team, and that's accurate. Let's look at that lineup real quickly before we set up the show. Let's look at what last night the Sox were putting out there, because when you do that, it's easy to agree. Robbie Grossman's leading off. Lenin Sosa's batting second. Andrew Vaughn's batting third. Kevin Pillar, been here for 5 minutes, is your cleanup hitter. Andrew Benintendi, the richest contract the White Sox have ever given a free agent, and his robust 140 average, batting fifth. Paul DeJong, journeyman, now veteran shortstop, sixth. Corey Lee, the DH. Zach Remillard is your second baseman. Zach's back, Bruce. I don't know if that's good or bad news. And then, behind the plate, Martin Maldonado hitting a robust 0.77. Not here to hit. But.
So a lot of these things you would expect by July or August. But because they've lost their top three run producers in Robert and Jimenez and Moncada, no team can sustain that. So let's be honest about that. Give them a break, that you lose your top three offensive players. You go into every game, and if you are betting, and if you are into gambling on baseball, the White Sox are always going to be an underdog.
They are always going to be an underdog,
right?
This year, no doubt about it.
Maybe today with Crochet pitching, you know, it's an even line.
Crochet is one of the three bright spots about the White Sox organization right now. Garrett Crochet, the Campfire Milkshake, and the fact that the team sponsored Robbie Avila in NIL money. The guy from Indiana State is going to St. Louis, likely. Those are the three positive stories on the South Side, but there are other things we need to talk about. We want to get to that. We're going to talk to Ethan Katt, the pitching coach, at the bottom of the hour, 9:40. He's expected to check in. We're going to talk to the Cubs general manager, Carter Hawkins, in the second hour at 10:30. Bruce, looking forward to that conversation. I'm going to talk to you, 312-644-6767. Let us know what you think. Cub fans, is the Craig Council honeymoon over, or are you still going to extend it a little bit longer through this tough stretch of the schedule? Sox fans, anything you want to vent about, we are here for you. Bruce, you were there. Chris Getz spoke before Friday's game. Before we get to something he said specifically, what did you generally think about his tone?
One of humbleness and a little bit of shock. A little bit of shock that they are without any offensive thrust there. They do have a situation where the bullpen is ever-changing and trying to patchwork their way through. They had a situation this week where one day you have Brian Shaw as your last inning guy, and 3 days later, you're releasing Brian Shaw. These are situations, again, that are so difficult on a front office, so difficult on a fan base, so difficult on a team that you expect to see in August and September, but not in April. Okay.
You don't, because Brian Shaw is here one day, gone the next. Oscar Colas brought up one day, gone the next. It's very difficult to keep track. Chris Getz has been challenged in a way maybe he didn't anticipate, but it is part of the job. At least Chris Getz acknowledged, Tyler, let's get his sound ready. And Chris Getz talked yesterday about understanding what the fans might be going through.
No, I understand that. I think probably the most of the frustration from fans is probably our early season struggles from a win-loss standpoint. Obviously, when some players, certain players get hurt, I know, you know, they could be disappointed because they're potentially their favorite players and they're no longer out there. So I certainly can relate to those frustrations, both personally in the position I'm in, but also for a fan of other teams as well and in other sports. So, it's my job to be able to plug in, you know, different players and continue to go out there and compete. That's really all we can do at this point.
Also updating the injury status, Yoan Moncada, maybe after the All-Star break, Luis Robert Jr., maybe not as bad as we thought, Bruce. There's a glimmer of hope, perhaps, but by then, who knows what the situation is. I think what you said about him being shocked by the reality is interesting. I also wonder if he's up for the job. You want to give him a chance. You want to be fair, but it's more difficult than maybe anybody anticipated.
You know, nobody's signing wants to sign up for a job in baseball where you cannot project when you're going to get better. Right now, the White Sox cannot project when they're going to be better. They can only go the course of, and I think I talked to it about it a couple times with you guys this week on Mully and Haw, the award-winning morning show on The Score. The idea that the quickest way to get better is to continue to build your pitching infrastructure. And that's what they're going to do. I mean, again, there's going to be, hopefully there'll be more credibility on the field, you know, when they get a couple of veterans that can throw five or six decent innings. Now, teams are being challenged all over baseball to be able to do that right now, including the Cubs.
Exactly. The Cubs are going through that now. But that's a really interesting point, Bruce, because you always want to know when the timetable, when you're going to be in a position to compete. But when you look at the roster, and I just read through the lineup, it's easy to conclude, I think, or to wonder, will any of those guys be on the team, the next Sox team, to be in contention or even get to the playoffs? I don't know if there's a name that I read that will still be here when that time arrives, if it ever does again.
Right, and a lot of the guys, you know, so with Michael Kopech, I think he has 2 years left here, including this year, to be a White Sox pitcher before he's a free agent. And nobody knows quite yet what he is, but he appears to be what we've talked about and what I've talked about over the past 4 years, a top-end, bullpen pitcher, you know. So there was a lot of conversation about using him for two innings or one inning and how it would work out. But to me, the reality is let's build up Michael Kopech to be our closer until July 31st, and then let's trade him for two young pitchers for the future.
I think that's going to be a conversation we're going to have a lot. I think it's something that we're going to have to really look at because of what we saw he's capable of doing.
Yeah.
If that continues.
If he's sustainable at 100 and going out there and feeling good about himself and doing the job, he's going to be really marketable at the end of July, and he will bring back something when people can say, hey, we got this guy throwing 100. We have another year commitment to him. We better give up that number 4 and number 8 player in our organization because we have to win the World Series.
Is that your Jed Hoyer imitation? Because I would like to hear him ponder that question. Let's get out to the phone lines. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Mike, our friend from Glencoe. Mike, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning, guys. And, you know, given where we are, as you've been talking about with the Sox, I'd like to ask you both a question that I've been thinking about. If we can you point to one thing, not a theme, but one instance, one development, one action in recent Sox history where it all started to go wrong, when things started sliding down? To me, it was the decision to pick Nick Madrigal fourth in the 2018 draft. You know, we had bit high picks both in 2018 and 2019, but picking Madrigal, nice guy, tough kid, but was such a huge miss. That's, if you had to ask me, that's when things started to go wrong. What do you guys think?
Interesting, Mike. Good question. I never considered Nick Madrigal getting drafted there as the flashpoint that he referred to it, but it's worth addressing. What do you think, Bruce? Is there one moment? I have an answer, but I'll ask you first.
Well, I think, you know, in hindsight, we can be fairly critical.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of upside to Nick Madrigal as far as the energy he brought, the type of player he is. And we're still seeing that with the Cubs as a part-time player, as a part-time third baseman, as a energizer when he gets out there. The injuries have done a tremendous disservice to Nick Madrigal's career.
I think he fits well in the Cubs. I like what he has to offer. I like having his bat and his glove, versatility and his attitude.
As Mike said, the way he's playing, you know, that's a fourth pick in the fourth round pick.
The Cubs don't have to justify anything because he got him in a trade.
Right.
He's not a fourth overall pick in terms of profile now.
I guess overall, you know, it's did they squander the younger pitchers in their organization? Did they not draft enough pitchers? Crochet's a example of yes, he could be the next Chris Sale with any health luck.
That would be great.
Going down the line.
Drafting him. I'll give Mike an answer, and this might seem a little bit out there, but if I were to pick one point in White Sox recent history that you could look at and say, if they had to do it over again, change this and things might be different, October 12th, 2020, they fired Rick Renteria. They overreacted to the loss in the playoffs. It was a COVID year. They weren't thinking straight. They thought they had to get point A to point B to see. They wanted a guy. Yeah, if you want to go out and get A.J. Hinch, whatever, but you fire Rick Renteria. You don't take advantage of the momentum that you have going organizationally. A lot of young talent, a lot of optimism. And I'm sorry, but you go out and you hire Tony La Russa, and at that point in time, things started to go south. Even though the next season went okay, standings-wise, results-wise, you changed the tenor and the tone of everything that happened on the South Side.
I'll go back further to James Shields' trade.
That was bad.
I mean, again, talking about a 17-year-old kid who you touted as, you know, being a next great star, but he was still 17.
Mm-hmm.
You were getting Shields, who was coming off of just giving up 10 runs to the team that he had faced before that and showing signs of aging. I understood the intent of trying to compete and use Shields, but if an organization can trade a Fernando Tatis Jr. and not be aware of the upside of him, that's when you have doubt.
That's when I think it's fair reason to have doubt when you make a trade like that. Let's wrap up this segment going with Ron on the South Side. Ron, welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you this morning?
Hey, Bruce, why'd you have to bring that up, man? It's a beautiful day.
I ruined your morning already.
Yeah, all right. Okay, real quick. It actually is two things, but most important, guys, Yoan Moncada. That was the big trade. You mentioned Sale. Actually, that was the beginning of what was supposed to be the White Sox. Yoan Moncada for me, period. And secondly, Bruce, the gentleman who spoke to you, you should have told him, go talk to Jerry Reinsdorf, who about Chris gets in here after being a failure. So I would have just told him, go talk to Jerry Reinsdorf. 10,000 fans out there, that's probably 10,000 too many. Lastly, Bruce, and you mentioned it, this takes me back to the late 60s and 70s. They were horrible on the field, off the field. But guess what?
you mentioned it, the savior, Dick Allen. There is no Dick Allen coming. And that's not Luis Robert, but that saved the
franchise. Montgomery's not going to be him? It's not Montgomery.
No. You know what? He doesn't have just the charisma, everything. Dick Allen just really, and most people will say, they call him the savior. And guess what? Luis Robert, he won't stay healthy either. So thanks, guys.
Great call, Ron. Who is the next Dick Allen on the South Side? I don't know the answer
He's
to that
question.
He's
probably playing in the in college or high school.
Probably
right
so.
Now.
I love Ron's nod to nostalgia, and he has been a Sox fan and a loyal one for a very long time.
Look, there were very few Dick Allens in history, period, okay? If the guy played up to the ability that he had and the potential of what he wanted to do, he would have been 600 home runs. He would have been a mini Hank Aaron for most of his career. Didn't like it quite as much.
He's Bruce Levine. I'm David Hall. This is Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. When we come back, where are you on Craig Counsell? We'll talk about it on Inside the Clubhouse 670 The Score.
Crochet back to work. The 2-2. Throws him inside with a fastball. Strike three.
Yeah, there's an example of just outguessing the hitter. You got one of baseball's best, and he just gets frozen at 95 on the inside corner.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score. Beautiful Saturday morning here in the city. David Haw, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock, talking baseball, Cubs and Sox. Thank you to NBC Sports Chicago for that highlight from Garrett Crochet. And he is pitching today. He is starting for the White Sox, 1-10. They go against the Reds, against Nick Lodolo. And Garrett Crochet, 1-1, 2 ERA, 21 strikeouts in 2 starts. And I think, Bruce, he is the bright spot on a team that doesn't have very many right now.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, just watching him pitch and seeing his aura and persona grow is fun as a baseball fan, just to see him there. You know, we had him on as a guest recently, and just the way he stood up to some of the things that I said and put me in my place at certain points where he felt he had to. I liked that a lot.
You look at the Sox rotation, and we're going to continue our Craig Counsell conversation in a moment where this segment we're going to devote to the White Sox, hoping to connect with Ethan Katz, a pitching coach. Bruce, when you look at Crochet and you look at Mike Soroka and you look at, you know, Fetty is the guy who comes over and he has some high expectations. I wonder at what point then do you expect, who's 4-5? What do those starts? What do you want to get out of those guys? You look at Drew Thorpe, who has had a pretty good start down in AA. When is he going to be ready? Nick Nastrini is another intriguing name. And then, of course, Mike Clevenger, they signed him, and I wonder what his timetable is. After the first couple starting pitchers, though, there are a lot of question marks, and I think that's indicative of a team that's bound to struggle.
Well, it is, but I mean, you know, even teams that are projected to win, you know, like the Chicago Cubs winning their division, you know, just a couple of injuries like they've had right now puts everything into question mark. We go to break, we come back, we see that the top pitcher in the Atlanta Braves is now going to be out for the year with an elbow situation.
Spencer Strider.
So sustainability of pitching staff, starting pitching staffs, one major injury, possibly you can move by that. The Yankees are doing that right now with Cole, okay? But two, I don't think there's teams in baseball that no matter what depth they think they have, they can sustain that.
It's a difficult thing plaguing many teams, and it's an issue we will continue to address. But right now, let's go down to Guaranteed Rate Field and talk to our next guest who joins us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline, and it is White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz. Download the Circus Sports app today. Good morning, Ethan. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm good.
So let's just start with the fact that, generally speaking, this is not the start anybody envisioned. We were talking about the challenges with the pitching coach and the rotation and obviously the bullpen. How are you keeping these pitchers positive, and what kinds of things are you continuing to stress each and every day?
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, every day is a new day, a new opportunity. The one thing that we've been really harping on is, you know, getting leadoff outs, trying to avoid the big inning. And, you know, as of yesterday, I haven't checked today, but we were first in baseball with that. First pitch strikes, we were ninth in baseball going into yesterday and trying to get two out of three. Important to get leverage, trying to avoid big innings. And these are the things we've been preaching in spring training and during the season right now. So those are some things that, you know, we talk about and we've done pretty well with, and just trying to encourage you guys to maintain this and, you know, play the games and see what happens.
When you talk about positives, we begin with Garrett Crochet. What did you see in spring training? What did you all see in spring training as far as his ability to go out there, not only healthy, but to be, you know, kind of have this aura that I had never seen with him as a relief pitcher? You know, certainly we knew about the dominant arm, but just going out there and looking like a guy that's had major league starts before when he had not.
Yeah, I mean, he came in, obviously, with the he had a great offseason, a little chip on his shoulder, really trying to win a spot in the rotation. You know, the one thing that's really stood out is his aggressiveness and confidence of attacking the strike zone, understanding how good his weapons are, and going right after it. I mean, his first game in spring training, you know, he had Betts, Ohtani, Freeman, and he went right through that. And that was just kind of the start of, you know, getting him going, and, you know, kept challenging him, and he's been, you know, he's been thriving with everything that's been thrown his way.
Talking with White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. And with that comes some caution, I think, Ethan. Garrett Crochet, we're speaking of, hasn't had more than 54 innings in any one season. And each start, I think you are looking at him and wondering, how long can he go? Can he go nine? Can he go eight? You want him on the mound as much as possible if you're a Sox fan, and then you have to balance that with it's a long season and he's never done this before. So what is the approach? Pitch count, innings count? Is it a feel? How do you factor all those things in?
It's more of a feel. It's the communication in between innings. It's a very similar situation, kind of what we have with Rodon. Obviously, Rodon had a little bit more of a workload, but he was coming off two seasons of, you know, not as much work, and that's kind of where we are with Garrett. So we've kind of gone through this before, and it's just monitoring, trying to give him as much rest as possible. You know, like last outing, he went, you know, 77 pitches, but came out of the game where he could have probably done more. But was that the best thing for him and us as an organization moving forward? Probably not. So we just got to kind of really, you know, watch the stressful innings. I'm constantly watching the scoreboard to see kind of where his velocity is. Also talking to him and then really monitoring the day-to-day work. And that's something that, you know, we've talked a lot about. How can we get the most rest and recovery to feel as good as we can on day five? So it's all teaching aspects right now, and trying to get him to understand, you know, things he's doing, the rest and recovery aspect, very mindful with his bullpens, and then just in the game, the constant communication of how he's doing and kind of being thoughtful of, you know, where's his pitch count at, and where's the velocity kind of showing him, where's his misses. So there's a lot of things going on, but really kind of leaning on sports and our sports science team, our biomechanics and everything to kind of really put together the best plan for him.
So, Ethan, for 4 or 5 years, I had this running narrative with former GM Rick Hahn that Michael Kopech is a bullpen pitcher, but not just a bullpen pitcher. When healthy, could be one of those dominant bullpen pitchers. And, you know, eventually, you know, he was doing okay as a starter, and Rick would admonish me and say, hey, you know, you were wrong about this one. Not trying to make myself right, but what I'm trying to get from you in an answer is, sometimes is it just easier to simplify things for a guy and make him into what he appears to look like to people rather than what you want him to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, you know, he's in a good spot, as in the role he is in. He's really embraced it. There are some things that we had asked to him that we talked about. What have we seen in the past, particularly me being here in 21, that I saw, and really trying to harness getting that aggressiveness back and really trust his stuff and letting it fly. You know, we're not trying to sit here and talk about walks or do anything like that. We're trying to just have him be aggressive. It's a unicorn fastball. We want it to play. And right now I think we're seeing, you know, how good Michael Kopech can be, and that he's thriving in the role that he is in right now.
How much of it is that after the minor knee surgery, he's able to reach back and get 4 or 5 more miles per hour easily because that's his DNA?
Yeah, I mean, he's battled a lot of things. You know, as a starter, you know, it's a heavy workload. And he was also battling the knee, some arm stuff as well. And you know, now he got in great shape this off season, and you know, he's able to move down the mound how he used to. And you know, obviously health is very, very important for guys to let everything kind of shine. So he's physically done a tremendous job this off season to put himself in the situation. And you know, now he's able to see when he is healthy what he can bring to the table.
So, Ethan, we know Michael Kopech, the name is a familiar one, but a lot of the names in the bullpen, the relievers for the White Sox, aren't to Sox fans and to a lot of us here in the city. We're learning these guys. I'm sure you're learning a lot about them as they kind of emerge. Who are a couple of the relievers that have stood out for whatever reason in the first couple weeks of the season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Steven Wilson, we got in the trade for Cease, has been great. He's been able to do some high leverage roles for us and really thrive in that. You know, the one thing that's really stood out is a pitch that was kind of underutilized with his changeup. It was primarily a fastball sweeper guy, and now particularly for left-handers, trying to problem solve that as much as we can. Getting his changeup involved, he's made some really big pitches. We loved, you know, the addition of Leon. He brings a lot of different, he can wear a lot of different hats, come in tough spots, pitch and leverage, do a bunch of different things for us. Obviously, we're looking forward to getting Brebbia back. The calf thing is, you know, flared up, but he's been on the right track and has a really big track record of everything of what he's done in the years past. So, you know, you look at him and then you add Kopech, those four guys. You know, we liked the way Garcia threw the ball in spring a lot. He has some really unique attributes, and he's been, you know, the last two games really started to get back on track to what he was doing. So, you know, you're looking at a bunch of guys there that, you know, you guys are stepping up, kind of finding their roles now, but they've really, you know, stood out the most.
Ethan, your role has changed just like Pedro's did, from a veteran team that was supposed to try to win a championship right away to a team that's going through getting viable arms ready and player development. I know player development's always a part of your job with pitchers and always a pitcher's job, but how do you weigh both of them, and how do you stay away personally as a coach from getting frustrated with the fact that, you know, you are being judged on them getting better, but at the same time, some of this growing pains, you know, it just has to happen when these guys are at this level this early.
I mean, I've always looked at, I mean, the first thing that got back to me when I first got into the big leagues, was working with San Francisco, that we talked about, that, you know, the big leagues is you're still developing. And if guys are looking for information, guys are looking to get better. So I always look at, no matter what the situation is, an opportunity to develop guys and help guys. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to work as hard as we can with what we got, with the right mindset, attitude every single day to try to help these guys, because their careers are very important to them. And we're going to do everything we can to get them better and give them all the information we can to kind of support them and work with them as hard as we can to get the most out of them. And, you know, I love what I do. Whether it's, you know, we're struggling and once things start to click, We're just going to continue to work as hard as we can and try to help these guys every single day.
Before we let you go, and really appreciate your time, Ethan, Spencer Strider became the latest big-name pitcher in Major League Baseball this morning to face surgery, the announcement the Braves made a little while ago. He joins Shane Bieber and others that indicate there's a problem. A lot of injuries are racking up, and I just wonder, in your role as a pitching coach, you've been at several different levels, what's your working theory about why this is happening more now? Is it the quest for velocity at such a young age? Is it the way pitchers are being used as they get older and mature? Do you have anything succinctly that fits an answer? Like, why is this happening now?
I mean, I think there's a lot of different reasons. Guys are throwing much harder than they ever did before. There's that. There's, you know, the shot clock. There's a big thing, you know, you talk about rest and recovery. That's what every sports science guy will talk about. But, you know, you're going out there and you got to throw pitches in 18, 20 seconds. And usually it's the most stressful pitches when things are kind of going. So it's, you know, there's a lot of different factors that probably play into this. You know, guys are throwing a lot more year-round to get ready. The training in the off-season is much more intense to get ready. So, I mean, there's a bunch of different factors. It's really frustrating to see because you're talking about a lot of arms that people come and want to watch. They're exciting, and, you know, it sucks for our sport. It sucks for the players, and you know, just hope that, you know, as time goes on and we can kind of rectify this and get guys to, you know, hopefully stay healthy a little bit more.
Are there ever any times for you, Ethan, where you get a player from another organization in and you go, why didn't they change his delivery all these years? Why is he landing like he is? Because the thing I watch the most, and, you know, regardless of how many years I've been doing this, I'm never going to be an expert when it comes to pitching, is how a pitcher lands when he throws a ball, and is he balanced? Is he going to get hurt because of his delivery? How often do you get a new pitcher in from somewhere else and go, man, where was the coaching at on this?
I mean, every player you get, you hear different information, different things that they've been talked to about. You know, some of the stuff that, you know, you watch and see on TV, you might see a guy like, well, he doesn't throw really hard, but he's pretty effective. There's probably just some deception. There's probably some secret sauce with his pitch movement that kind of stands out. So one thing you want to make sure is, like, you don't want to disrupt that. There's a reason why some guys are really good. But I think there's some pitches that are being added to guys' arsenals that, you know, could cause to some injuries, so to say. And whenever you add something, there's always a domino effect. You know, with the guy's arm used to throwing this pitch, there's some things that can, you know, stand out. And then also, when you add something, it could affect the delivery too. And then you kind of see where things kind of go a little bit different. So there's a lot of different factors that kind of jump in and play in the role of this.
Ethan, thank you so much for your time. Good luck the rest of the way, and appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach. Lot of different interesting stuff he covered. Tough job for him with that bullpen and with that rotation.
Yeah, you know, if you are a great teacher and a great coach, you are going to have all that you want on the table there right now. And I admire him for, you know, again, same thing with Grifol. We talked about him mulling Hall this week. He was hired for one job, and they're dealing with another, and that is they were hoping that this would be a championship-caliber pitching staff that he was helping coach to win championships. Right now, it's a younger, evolving staff that's in player development.
Speaking of managers, where are you with Craig Counsell, Cub fans? We'll talk about that next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yes, tonight the Cubs continue their series against the Mariners. Pregame coverage begins at 8:05 with Pat Hughes and Ron Kroemer on the call for first pitch at 8:40. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. It will be Shota Imanaga, the late Shota, tonight on Saturday night against Emerson Hancock for the Mariners. The Cubs, 7-6, losers of three of the last four. That is the challenge for Craig Counsell, and we will talk about Craig Counsell and his effect on this team and what to expect moving forward. I'm Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yes, tonight the Cubs continue their series against the Mariners. Pregame coverage begins at 8:05 with Pat Hughes and Ron Kroemer on the call for first pitch at 8:40. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. It will be Shota Imanaga, the late Shota, tonight on Saturday night against Emerson Hancock for the Mariners. The Cubs, 7-6, losers of three of the last four. That is the challenge for Craig Counsell, and we will talk about Craig Counsell and his effect on this team and what to expect moving forward. I'm Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.